I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
These brave public servants are taking a stand, a strong stand, against a blatant power grab that's happening in their state as we speak. And this will have implications, not just in Texas, but for our entire nation and its future.
Showdown in Texas. More than 50 Democratic state lawmakers have fled the state in order to block a vote on a newly drawn Texas map that could add 5 Republican congressional seats, including 4 in majority Hispanic districts, all at President Trump's request. We'll speak with Democratic Texas State Representative Cassandra Garcia Hernandez, who fled first to New York, along with other state legislators, and is now in Chicago. Then U.S. House Speaker Mike Johnson led a delegation to Israel and the occupied West Bank amidst escalating settler violence against Palestinians. Israel's refusing to release the body of Palestinian activist Oda Hagalin, who was shot to death by an Israeli settler last week. He's since been released.
Why did they kill him? What did he do? He was far away and not doing anything. Why does it always have to be us on the losing side? To feel this sort of pain daily, to lose people we love. Suleiman first, then Ode, the best young man in the area.
We'll speak with a medic who treated the wounded and with Palestinian activist and journalist Basil Adra, co-director of the Oscar-winning documentary No Other Land and close friend of Oda. Then as protests continue worldwide demanding an end to Israel's genocide and starvation campaign in Gaza, here in New York City, police arrested over 40 people outside the Trump International Hotel in a peaceful action led by the Jewish American group If Not Now and Jewish leaders.
Aid to Gaza will save the remaining hostages, and it will save the children and the people of Gaza who deserve to live. We're here to say, let Gaza live, to risk everything, to say never again.
We'll speak with some of the people at the protest, as well as Amazon labor union leader Chris Smalls. He was released from an Israeli prison and returned to the U.S. last week after at least 5 days in Israeli custody. He was joined 20 activists with the Freedom Flotilla Coalition that attempted to break Israel's blockade on Gaza by sailing in a civilian aid ship. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. At least 8 more Palestinians starved to death in Gaza over the last 24 hours, including 7 children, raising the hunger-related death toll to 188. Palestinian officials say Israel is allowing just 86 trucks carrying desperately needed food, medicine and other supplies into Gaza per day, far short of the 600 trucks that aid organizations say are needed daily to meet the basic needs of Gaza's more than 2 million people. On Monday, scores of Palestinians stood in long lines outside a makeshift soup kitchen in Khan Yunis hoping for a meal.
This aid does not reach us. We do not see it. People like us do not get aid. Most of the people do not get the aid. We hear about it in the news, but we do not see it. We do not see it on the ground. I hope that the crossings open and that the food enters and the flour and the aid enters for people and that this big crisis that we are living ends.
Israeli attacks across Gaza over the past day have killed at least 87 Palestinians, including 52 people seeking food and aid. Another 644 people were injured, bringing the official death toll of the wounded to over 150,000 since October 2023. Meanwhile, there are reports of heavy airstrikes and artillery fire as Israel steps up its assault on Gaza. Israeli media is reporting Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is set to announce plans to fully occupy the entire Gaza Strip, including areas where it's believed Hamas is holding Israeli hostages. Israeli forces have arrested at least 15 Palestinians after another night of raids across the occupied West Bank, even as Israeli settlers attack Palestinian homes north of Jericho and use bulldozers to level Palestinian farmers' crops south of Nablus. The settler violence came as the Republican Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives, Mike Johnson, visited an Israeli settlement in the West Bank after an unannounced visit to Israel with other Republican lawmakers. Israeli settlements are illegal under international law, but Johnson used his visit to declare, quote, the mountains of Judea and Samaria are the rightful property of the Jewish people, unquote. Meanwhile, family members of a U.S. citizen who was killed in a settler attack in the West Bank last week are demanding the Trump administration open an investigation into his killing. 40-year-old Khamis Ayad asphyxiated to death after settlers set fire to cars outside his home last Thursday. He died trying to put out the flames after Israeli soldiers arrived and fired tear gas in his direction. Ayad is a former Chicago resident. He leaves behind five children. He's at least the second U.S. citizen killed in the West Bank since July. In Israel, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's government voted unanimously to remove the attorney general who's prosecuting Netanyahu for corruption. Attorney General Gali Baharav Miara has repeatedly clashed with Netanyahu's coalition about overhauling the judiciary. Netanyahu is facing charges of bribery, fraud, breach of trust in three separate cases. Here in New York, police arrested more than 40 people Monday evening as they held a nonviolent protest outside the Trump International Hotel, demanding an end to Israel's starvation campaign in Gaza and a halt to U.S. weapons transfers to Israel. The protests were led by the Jewish American group, If Not Now. Democracy Now! Spoke to Ari Levfornari, a rabbi from Philadelphia, as he was being arrested for blocking traffic.
The only way that Palestinians and Israelis can be safe, including the hostages who are held in Gaza, is if the people of Palestine are free. We just saw that Evyatar David, one of the remaining living Israeli hostages, is starving. He's starving because everyone in Gaza is starving. Food aid to Gaza will save the remaining hostages, and it will save the children and the people of Gaza who deserve to live. We're here to say, let Gaza live, to risk everything, to say never again.
Meanwhile, a coalition of direct action groups has announced the largest attempt yet by civilians to break the siege on Gaza. The Global Samud Flotilla aims to launch dozens of boats carrying humanitarian aid from Spain, Tunisia, and elsewhere in early September, with delegates from at least 44 countries on board. Later in the broadcast, we'll speak with U.S. labor leader Chris Smalls, who's just returned to the United States after he was abducted by Israeli forces from the Handala aid ship as it sailed toward Gaza. Smalls says he was beaten by his Israeli guards. Sudan's military rulers say they repelled an attack by rapid support forces, paramilitaries, in the city of Al-Fashir, the army's last holdout in Sudan's Darfur region. Hundreds of thousands of civilians trapped by the fighting are rapidly running out of food and under constant artillery and drone fire. Those who are able to flee the violence face squalid camps where cholera and other diseases are rampant and many face starvation. This is Inam Abdullah Mohammed, a 19-year-old who fled violence in Sudan's Zamzam camp before she was attacked by RSF forces in a village near Al-Fashir.
If they find a person with a mobile phone, they would take it from him. If you have money, they take it. If you have good, strong donkey or something like that, they will take it from you. They kill the people. They killed people in front of us. They took girls in front of us and raped them.
The World Food Program warns a protracted famine is taking hold in parts of Sudan, with nearly 25 million people facing acute hunger. The United Nations warns over 1.5 million Afghans have been forcefully repatriated, most of them from Iran, where they face poverty, hunger, and serious human rights violations. The UN Assistance Mission in Afghanistan reports many of those returning face torture, mistreatment, arbitrary arrest, and detention after the Taliban violated its promise to provide amnesty to people affiliated with the former U.S.-backed government that collapsed in 2021. The World Food Program warns nearly 10 million people, about a quarter of Afghanistan's population, face acute food insecurity, with its sharpest surge ever of child malnutrition, coming after the Trump administration terminated $1.7 billion in contracts for U.S. aid to Afghanistan. Texas's House of Representatives voted Monday to track down and arrest more than 50 Democratic legislators who left the state to block the GOP's new congressional map. The House Speaker said he would sign civil warrants, which would allow the sergeant-at-arms and state troopers to arrest the state legislators and bring them to the Texas state capitol. The warrants would only apply within the state of Texas, since the legislators have fled to Illinois, to New York, and to Massachusetts. On Monday, Democratic Congressman Greg Cassar joined protesters in a march outside the Texas governor's mansion.
Governor Greg Abbott is a coward for saying that our law enforcement should go out and arrest our local elected officials. This is America. This is a place where you're not supposed to be sending law enforcement to go handcuff elected officials that you disagree with.
After headlines, we'll go to Chicago to speak with Texas State Representative Cassandra Garcia Hernandez. In New York, Democratic Governor Kathy Hochul announced the state would abandon independent, nonpartisan redistricting after Texas Republicans pushed a new congressional map that would give the GOP five extra seats in the U.S. House of Representatives. Governor Hochul was joined by Texas Democratic legislators who fled the state to block the GOP's redistricting effort.
This is a war. We are at war. And that's why the gloves are off, and I say, bring it on.
In more news from New York, a Scarsdale High School graduate student, was released Monday night from ICE custody. 20-year-old Yunsu Go, a Purdue University engineering student in Indiana, was arrested and taken into ICE custody in New York after a routine visa hearing last week. In Los Angeles, a plaintiff in the lawsuit against federal immigration arrest described horrible conditions at ICE jails.
They chained us and put me in a small room with 52 other people. No bathroom, no hygiene, just filth and fear. I'm diabetic. I need proper foods and fluids to survive. But what they gave us to eat was inhumane. Nothing a person should ever have to eat. My sugar levels were out of control. I developed an eye infection while detained and begged for help, but no medical attention ever came.
In more news from New York, a former prison guard has been sentenced to 15 years in prison for the fatal beating of 43-year-old Robert Brooks, who was incarcerated at the Marcy Correctional Facility. Body camera footage of the December killing shows the group of guards repeatedly punching and kicking Brooks in the face, chest, and groin. Four of the officers involved were wearing body cameras but did not activate them. Brooks was black. All the officers who took turns beating him appear to be white. Six guards were charged with murder. Two survivors of convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein have filed emotional letters to a court in New York, lashing out at the Trump administration's handling of the Epstein files. One of the survivors writes, quote, "Dear United States, I wish you would have handled and would handle the whole Epstein files with more respect towards and for the victims. I am not some pawn in your political warfare. What you've done and continue to do is eating at me day after day as you help to perpetuate the story story indefinitely, unquote. Another survivor writes, quote, I feel like the DOJ's and FBI's priority is protecting the third party, the wealthy men, by focusing on scrubbing their names off the files, of which the victims know who they are, unquote. The FBI had reportedly redacted the names of Donald Trump and other prominent individuals from the agency's files, citing privacy reasons. Bloomberg News reports the FBI instructed its agents to flag any mention of Trump during a March review of hundreds of thousands of pages of records in the Epstein files. In California, a fast-growing wildfire has scorched more than 65,000 acres in the Los Padres National Forest, with the flames fanned by dry, gusty winds. In Arizona, wildfire in the north rim of Grand Canyon National Park has become the largest active wildfire in the United States. The Dragon Bravo fire has consumed 125,000 acres since it erupted July 4th. Meanwhile, vast swaths of Canada and the United States are experiencing unhealthy air quality due to wildfires raging across five Canadian provinces. Smoke from the fires has triggered air quality alerts for tens of millions of people in cities stretching from Minneapolis to Boston. And a new study in the medical journal The Lancet estimates the global plastic pollution is responsible for health-related economic losses exceeding $1.5 trillion annually. Researchers found the principal driver of the growing public health crisis is a huge increase in global plastic production, from 2 million tons in 1950 to a projected 1.2 billion tons by 2060. The report's authors write, quote, plastics are a grave, growing, and under-recognized danger to human and planetary health, unquote. The findings come as a conference of the Intergovernmental Negotiating Committee for the Global Plastics Treaty opens in Geneva today. Greenpeace activists rallied ahead of the talks.
Our demands are for a treaty that takes a full life cycle approach, cuts plastic production, bans toxic chemicals, and provides the financing that's going to be required to make this transition.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. When we come back, we go to the occupied West Bank. Stay with us.
It's 11:59 and 59 seconds. If I'm gonna die tonight, I want heaven. Hey, with you. It's 11:59 and 59 seconds. If I'm gonna die tonight, I want heaven. Hey, with you.
It was 11:59 and 59 clicks. The whole world's burning, but the clock just ticks over and over every single day. Some people steal while other people pray to God, to man, machines, or whatever. Some of us just lost faith altogether. No way, they say, we can't live this way. That's why so many people stand up and say, one love, one blood, one heart, one soul, and one drum, and only one rhythm, one tribe, and all of us singing. It's 11:59 and 59 seconds. If I'm gonna die tonight, I won't live. With you. It's 11:59 and 59 seconds. If I'm gonna die tonight, I want heaven. With you, I wanna rock with you. Tonight I wanna rock with you.
It was 11:59 by Michael Franti, performing in our Democracy Now! Studio. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now!'s Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
We begin today's show in the occupied West Bank, where Israeli forces have arrested at least 15 Palestinians after another night of raids, even as Israeli settlers attack Palestinian homes north of Jericho and use bulldozers to level Palestinian farmers' crops south of Nablus. The settler violence came as the Republican Speaker of the House of Representatives, Mike Johnson, visited an Israeli settlement in the West Bank after an unannounced visit to Israel with other Republican lawmakers. Israeli settlements are illegal under international law, but Johnson used his visit to declare, quote, the mountains of Judea and Samaria are the rightful property of the Jewish people, unquote. Meanwhile, family members of a U.S. citizen who was killed in a settler attack in the West Bank last week are demanding the Trump administration open investigation into his death. 40-year-old Kami Sayad asphyxiated after settlers set fire to cars outside his home Thursday. He died trying to put out the flames after Israeli soldiers arrived and fired tear gas in his direction. Ayad is a former Chicago resident. He leaves behind five children. He's at least the second U.S. citizen killed in the West Bank since July. Meanwhile, Israeli authorities are continuing to refuse to release the body of the Palestinian activist Oda Havalin, who was fatally shot by an Israeli settler last Monday in the occupied West Bank. Israel's also still detaining seven members of his family. 60 Palestinian women from the village of Al-Khir began a hunger strike Thursday to demand justice. Havalin worked on the Oscar-winning film No Other Land. Meanwhile, Israeli authorities have released the settler accused of killing Havalin, Inon Levy. He had been under house arrest. Earlier this year, the Trump administration lifted Biden-era sanctions on Levy. This is Oda Havalin's uncle, Ibrahim, speaking the day after his nephew was killed.
After October 7, we have been undergoing difficult times that include land annexation, prevention of herding, preventing people from accessing their lands, attacking people directly, sometimes even killings, like what happened to the martyr Oday. All these procedures that we have been through are all tools of the settlers so that they could annex the land and empty it from its people.
For more, we're joined by two guests, Basil Adra, co-director of the Oscar-winning documentary No Other Land, a Palestinian activist and journalist who writes for 972. He spent years documenting Israeli efforts to evict Palestinians living in Masafer Yatta, south of Hebron. Oda worked with him and Yuval Abraham on the film. He was also a close friend of Oda Havalin. And in Hebron, Ty Kavanaugh is a former U.S. Navy medic who's a medical student at the University of Limerick, an international volunteer working with Palestinian public health groups in the occupied West Bank. Last Monday, he was in Al-Khair when Oda Havalin was shot and killed. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! Ty, if you can start off by telling us the scene that day, if you can talk about what happened to Oda.
Yes, yeah, I arrived there that day just by coincidence. I just wanted to visit these villages because I've been doing clinics in Masafer Yatta in the area. A friend of mine who runs Project Walsh, he happened to know people there. I figured I'd tag along with him. We get out of the car. 15 minutes later, the bulldozer doing like construction starts driving through their crops. People go out to try to wave it off and stop it. A man from the village is struck in the head and shoulder by that bulldozer. Myself, an American nurse and a Palestinian nurse are trying to treat him, at which point gunfire starts. And then seconds later, people start yelling that Ada's been shot, at which point we treat him. Very quickly, we try to take him to the settlement to get an ambulance at that gate. We lose a pulse. We're starting CPR on him. Meanwhile, I later learned who – I didn't see who the shooter was when it happened, but I later recognized the shooter as a guy who was just milling around, just standing over us while we were doing CPR. Many of the settlers, especially those teenagers type, were jeering and laughing at us. I don't understand Hebrew, but they were yelling all kinds of things at us. Myself and the Palestinian medic are told to leave. The American nurse is detained and later deported by Israeli authorities for God knows what their excuse is for that. The moment I am done treating the wounded and told to leave, I turn around and I see, I don't know what I expected. I thought the seriousness of that would cause a change in behavior, but the IDF is immediately just attacking the villagers. I see people blindfolded and handcuffed, everyone being penned in, and they're just trying to, it seemed like they're trying to pen everybody in and just antagonize people. They want them to throw rocks. They wanted an excuse to do stuff, and they were just dragging people out. And I see Levy, pointing out people too. And the IDF just goes in, drags them away. At one point, all the internationals and most of the internationals are detained by the IDF. Of course, I'm covered in blood. Literally, I am covered in blood. They did not ask me a single question about what happened. The only thing they started doing is looking at my visa and passport and screaming about my immigration status because they look at the wrong date.
We're showing images, by the way, of Inon Levy waving his gun, the gun that they said he used to kill Oda. Juan?
And yes, I wanted to ask you, Ty, you're saying that the IDF soldiers never asked you any questions about what actually had happened, but then began to target the victims rather than the perpetrator?
Yes, of course. No, at no point was anyone who was, I'm sure, anyone who was Palestinian or not a settler asked any question about what happened. That was not important to them. What was important was going after the people in the village, and they were trying to find excuses to arrest international observers or volunteers or the people who happened to be there. Now, I myself happened, just by coincidence, I was doing a clinic in Umakhir today, and we're seeing the injuries of the people who were released, that were beaten and held in stress positions while they were detained, and all the women who are still on hunger strike and their health conditions.
I'd like to bring in Basil Adra, also co-director of the Oscar-winning documentary No Other Land. Could you talk to us about what has happened in the past few days, especially with Oda Hagelin?
It has been crazy since Yunon shot our closest friend Auda and killing him. Israeli occupation soldiers have been invading the Morn tent day after day, forcing journalists, solidarity activists, and Palestinians like me, who is not residents of Umm al-Khair village, to go out of the village, and they arrested activists from there. That happens during the day, and during the night, the army come again and invade the community, arresting people for three nights, arresting residents, Auda's brothers, cousins, and other relatives, accusing them throwing stones, while the settler who killed Auda is free. And yesterday he was able to be back to work and to dig and to provocate the villagers and the family of Auda next to expanding the illegal settlement of Karmael into the village right next to Auda's family homes and community center.
Basil, our deepest condolences on the loss of your dear friend Oda. You worked together on your film, the Oscar-winning documentary No Other Land. If you can talk more about Inon Levy, the violent Israeli settler, very well known, who we've been showing waving his gun, who the eyewitnesses say just opened fire on Oda, was taken, then put under house arrest. And even as Oda's family remains arrested, he has been freed. If you can explain the movement right now, the 60 women who are on hunger strike. I covered a big protest in New York last night. Oda's name was raised repeatedly.
Yeah, Oda was our close friend. He was a father for three beautiful kids. He was an English teacher. He hosted all the time solidarity activists from the U.S., from all over the world, who come to Masafer Yatta, to Umm al-Khair, and tell the story of his village, of our villages. He's been traveling to different countries around the world to talk about Umm al-Khair, about his story, the story of the community of Masafer Yatta, the threats that we're all facing. So he was the voice of the community. He was an activist that filming what's happening. He filmed his own death when Yunon shot him. He was a person that optimistic, that liked the life, and he was really planning for a beautiful future. He dreamed for a beautiful future. He was 35 meters away from this criminal, Yunon Levy, and he was standing with his son in a small basketball playground in the village when Enon shot him. Enon is a settler that created an illegal outpost in 2021 next to Zanuta village here in the South Hebron Hills, and kept attacking Zanuta and the village of Zanuta day after day, night after night, destroying crops, attacking shepherds, going to people's homes, smashing properties like solar panels, water pipes, cars as well, attacking sheep and shepherds as well, the families in the houses, threatening people if they don't flee, they would die there. So 250 people.